This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. Brian Grogan joins us in studio today. Indecency in the media, when is it acceptable to regulate free speech? Brian is a shareholder and director with the Minneapolis law firm of Moss and Barnett, practicing in the firm's communications, business law, and infrastructure practice groups. Brian is the 2009-2010 chair of the communications law section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. Once again, indecency in the media, when is it acceptable to regulate free speech? And this is a great topic and something that I deal with in this job. When I sit in this chair, there's always a concern that something will slip and go out over the public airwaves and I'll get in a lot of trouble, potentially lose my job over it. So anybody that's in broadcasting is very aware of what the rules are, but the question from the general public is, what is considered indecent? And Brian, welcome to the program. It's a great topic today.
Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me here. You know, I have to give one shout-out today. I've never done this on your station before, but we have a listener today listening in London, England, on WCCO.com. My daughter's over there studying for the semester at Westminster University, so I hope she's dialed in and she's listening. So now you're worldwide, Steve.
Yeah, very good. Once again, online, WCCRadio.com. It shows how the media has changed in very short order, the fact that not only are we available over the air, but available worldwide on the World Wide Web. And that's changed things as well. But once upon a time, there was a real strict regulation about what went over the air, radio and television. The FCC was the absolute ruler. There was a comedian by the name of George Carlin that maybe changed the game a little bit. Well, let's talk about Carlin and the seven dirty words and how it really got the ball rolling to where we are today.
Right. It was in the mid-70s, and George Carlin appeared on an ABC radio station. He was talking about what you can and can't say on television, and he went through his seven dirty words monologue. It just took him 12 minutes to go through this, but it sent kind of through the industry a bunch of outrage. There was a number of complaints that were sent in to the station, and as a result, the FCC went ahead and fined ABC for indecency. And there's a definition we'll get to on indecency, but that led to a very famous Supreme Court case that's called Pacifica. And that has really set the benchmark now for indecency on both radio and television for the last quarter century, until this most recent case this summer. And now everything's kind of upside down. Nobody quite knows what the rules are after this case.
And Carlin's case goes all the way to the Supreme Court. It becomes the law of the land, so to speak, that these words are strictly verboten. It sets the stage for what's indecent. Now, once upon a time in television, we were talking before the program, the Dick Van Dyke Show, Jim Engblom brought this up before the program, and I think it's a great point. Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke's characters in the Dick Van Dyke Show weren't allowed at that point in time to share the same bed. When they were in the bedroom, they had separate beds. That was true on the Lucy Show as well. I love Lucy.
Right.
Ricky and Lucy weren't allowed. So the standards there have changed a lot over the years, but you get back to what is indecent, there's still some pretty strong definitions of that.
Yeah, and you know what was interesting about the Carlin case is once you had the Supreme Court issue that ruling, it kind of sent a calm over the industry because now you knew what the rules were. Broadcasters just want to know, what can I do and what can't I do? And then you can train guys like you. You can put them through courses and you can say, these are the things you can't do. And so for about 20 years there was this calm on the industry because there was literally a forbidden seven words. But everything else arguably was free game. And for a 15-year period, the FCC did not have one single enforcement action in either television or radio following that George Carlin case, which I thought was kind of interesting that there was so much certainty about what you could say and what you couldn't say. Nobody had any problems. Then it all kind of came to a crashing halt around 2000 And that's when this most recent case started to come forward. And that's when the FCC decided to change these rules, and that caused uncertainty. And if it's one thing business doesn't like, it's uncertainty. And that made it tough then for your industry to try to figure out what are the rules that we have to play by.
And there are probably some examples in radio specifically that pushed the envelope. Howard Stern, who was in New York and syndicated all over the country, now is on satellite radio and isn't under the thumb of the FCC, so to speak. But Howard Stern and other morning shows around the country really started to push the envelope on what was decent and what was indecent. If you've ever seen the film Private Parts, they even get into the seven dirty words when the NBC attorneys come in and speak to Howard and his boss, the program director at WNBC at the time. It's really a famous scene as far as radio people go, because they kind of lay it out, what you can and can't do and what's indecent. So I would assume that started the area of pushing the envelope, Howard Stern and others like that.
Right. You know, it seems like every administration has their battle with this issue. For Clinton, for example, they came up with the Indecency Act and the Communications Act in 96. There they were trying to regulate the Internet. And they were trying to say there was a time at which we had a law in this country that said you can't put out anything indecent on the web. I mean, think about that today. When you can surf the web and see almost anything you want, anytime you want, that law was quickly overturned as unconstitutional. Then when Bush came in the year 2000, his administration decided to get a little more aggressive on the enforcement of indecency. And it's when they changed the rules that all of a sudden we had some things coming, like the Super Bowl incident. We had Bono collecting an award at an award show using a poor choice of words, shall we say. And those are things we're going to talk about next, which kind of led to this case and then have created this confusion that we have today.
All right. Once again, indecency in the media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? We're also going to find out more about what the FCC actually has the power to regulate coming up as well. Brian Grogan joining us in studio. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Morris and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know the shareholders of Moss & Barnett elected attorney Ann Newhall as president of the firm back in 1999, making it one of the very first firms to be led by a woman?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss & Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. News Radio 830 WCCO, streaming online right now at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett online, moss-barnett.com. Indecency in the media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? And at the top of the program, Brian, you talked about a case that has been making its way through. It started 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah, it started in 2000, and we had a new administration come in with a new FCC. And they were feeling some pressure to kind of crack down on what they were seeing as an evolution of, you know, greater indecency in the media. And so a couple things happened all around the same time period. First of all, you had the Janet Jackson incident at the Super Bowl.
The wardrobe malfunction.
The malfunction. And that got people real up in arms. And it, even though that event was just a split second, it led to folks debating, what are we seeing on TV? And more importantly, what are our kids seeing on TV? Because all of this comes back to protecting minors. We don't want them to be exposed to things that parents don't want them to be exposed to. And they're using public broadcast waves here, right? They're, whether it's ABC, NBC, CBS, or the radio waves that we're using to be on this show. These are
Fox.
Exactly, Fox.
Yeah.
And these are public spectrum. So the FCC is in charge of regulating that. So we had those events. Then we had Bono at a music award show receive an award. And all of these things relate to really two words in the English language. One of them starts with an F and one of them starts with an S. And those are two words the FCC really doesn't like, because as their definition for indecency is described, if it depicts sexual activity or excretory activity, it's a no-no. It's an indecent, it's considered on its face profane and indecent. And the buzzwords they use are explicit, vulgar, and indecent. So those problems occurred when we had these things called fleeting expletives, where somebody gets up at an award show, very excited.
Live television.
Yep. And somebody's supposed to be on a switch, right? Just like here, we have a producer on a switch that if I make a mistake, there's a little delay, and they can beep that out.
Or when I'm on the air, they've got their index finger right over the dump button, ready to pounce.
Sometimes for a whole 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, 7-second delay. People are familiar with it, even if they aren't in the business. That's why it's there. You know, true live is not a good idea in this environment.
And so what happened is at one of these shows, a star, I guess, named Nicole Richie, who was on a show called The Simple Life with Paris Hilton, she got up to accept an award, and she described something getting on her purse. It was from a cow, and it was started with the S word. So that occurred, and then immediately after, she used the other word. And the guy on the switch,
double whammy,
didn't get it quick enough. He caught the first one, didn't catch the second one. That led to a bunch of fines by the FCC because there was complaints raised. Now, to set this in motion, though, at the exact same time, the FCC was taking their fine structure and was changing it. So if we have CBS, and let's assume you operate 100 radio stations around the country, if you make a mistake on one station, but if that was broadcast on all 100 stations, they changed their rules in the early 2000s to mean now that there was a separate fine for every single station that broadcast it. So for all the networks, Fox included, that means that it used to be a $10,000 fine, now becomes a multi-million dollar fine because of the nature in which these fines were imposed. The exact same time, Congress increased the fine level from $30,000 to $300,000, a tenfold increase for every single one. So now, if you had PBS made a violation on their channel, the fine would be over $100 million. It was big money for these stations. So as a result of this, this litigation started because the networks kind of pooled their resources and said, we can't afford this fight. And we don't quite know what the rules are in terms of what we can do and what we can't do. So our knee-jerk reaction is to go way away from that foul line because we don't want to jeopardize the penalties we might get.
Right, and broadcast faces restrictions that cable don't. And a little bit later on, we'll talk about the role of the FCC. But once again, it gets back to the public airways, AM, FM, television, VHF, UHF. Now that it's all digital, I believe it's all UHF band. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, if it goes out over the air, that's where the FCC has jurisdiction. And this is what it impacted.
That's right. The FCC, I mean, the only reason we have a First Amendment issue at all is because we have something called state action. And that means basically that the government's involved. Could be your local government, state, the federal government. But unless the government is involved in trying to tell you what you can or can't say, you don't have a First Amendment issue. So at my office, my boss could tell me, hey, this is what's permissible or not permissible in this private office. That's fine. There is no First Amendment issue. They can make whatever rules they want. But you guys are using public broadcast waves that are licensed by the FCC. So the FCC gets to impose rules on you in terms of what you can and can't say here because they don't want minors who are out there listening to these shows, especially during these daytime hours, to have problems with it. So that's why they can submit these rules.
But on the internet, what we stream on our website could be completely different content. Could be content that's considered indecent by the FCC, just so long as it doesn't hit the public airways.
That's absolutely right. There's a different standard for those two mediums.
All right, we have more on this. Indecency in the media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? Brian Grogan joining us here in studio on a Saturday at News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios in downtown Minneapolis, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, Saturdays at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Indecency in the media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? Brian Grogan joining us in studio on the program today. By the way, if you have a question or a comment, feel free to call the program 651-989-9226, toll free 1-866-989-9226. Let's get back to that case that got to federal court this summer. What's the very latest? What's going on?
Sure. I mean, the case, basically, it's Fox versus the FCC. And Fox and a bunch of other stations brought the case because of these incidents that occurred in the early 2000s, several different cases. One was the Nicole Richie thing we talked about. One was the Bono deal that we talked about, where he made a fleeting expletive during an award
show. On a live program. And I think since then, and the Janet Jackson deal, now most live events aren't actually live. They're on a delay. So there's someone sitting at a button like we have here in our studio where you can dump something that is under company rules or FCC rules, indecent.
Right.
So it really was a game changer, because even sporting events now, I would assume, are on that delay because of the chance for a microphone to pick up a player with a fleeting expletive.
And that's new policy, because that used to not be the way. Because
right.
in 2000, when this all changed, that's where these all came out. And what happened with this case is it went up to the Second Circuit, which is out in New York, and the Second Circuit said, we find all these rules to be arbitrary and capricious, and they found that under the Administrative Procedures Act. So that's not nearly as interesting to talk about as the First Amendment, so we're not going to. But it went up to the Supreme Court already on that issue, and the Supreme Court disagreed and said, no, we don't think it's arbitrary and capricious. The FCC does have the right to make these rules, but we're not going to talk about whether it violates the First Amendment. We're going to have the Second Circuit rule on that. So that's what happened this summer, is it went back to the Second Circuit for the purpose of deciding, are these FCC rules in violation of the First Amendment? And the Second Circuit said very clearly, yes, they are. And it was really interesting to read the rationale of the court. By the way, this will go back to the Supreme Court now, and we'll finally get a new decision on this. But it really challenges all the way back to Carlin's seven dirty words. And the court seemed to be looking at it saying, it's not 1975 anymore. We've got the internet. We've got cable TV that now more people watch than the broadcast networks. We've got pay-per-view stations. We've got all kinds of new media out there. And we've also got new technology. They reference the V-chip, which is technology that any one of us can use on our television sets. As a matter of fact, our TV sets have it, if you bought a set in the last 10 years.
And that idea came out of the Clinton administration, and it finally got to the marketplace, and now it's standard equipment. I doubt if many people even know that.
They probably don't know they have it, but what it allows you to do as a parent is to say, I restrict my TV from carrying any content that's not rated, and there's a rating system that the networks have to put in place. So you could say, G, PG, it's not quite on the same motion picture rating system.
But you can filter out words, images, et cetera, whether it's sexual or violent.
That's right.
You can screen that out. The TV will block that.
That's right. And so the court looked at that and said, the world's different today, and so we might need different standards. But what they really said, the gist of this case is, these rules are vague, and broadcasters don't know how the FCC is going to apply them. And let me give you a couple of examples. Some networks played Saving Private Ryan, which is obviously a very popular war movie, Steven Spielberg, Academy Award-winning movie. They used the two words that we've talked about, one starting with F and one starting with S, frequently throughout that movie. But the FCC, even though they got complaints, said that there was artistic quality to that movie and it was necessary to portray the message of the show. Now, the same kind of scenario went on for a PBS documentary on a show called The Blues, which was not fictional, but real-life blues musicians down south. And there they used the same two words. There, that was deemed indecent because of the use of those words. One's fictional, one's real, two different standards.
Yeah, one was a documentary.
Right. And you would think that would be held to maybe a little more or less strict standard.
So that gets back to the confusion that exists out there.
And they cited that using the phrase vague. They said this does not – there's a standard under First Amendment analysis called the vagueness standard. And what it really means is, let's say, Steve, that you're CBS and you have to make some rules about what goes on and what doesn't go on. You read these rules and you have no idea. Very interesting. There was oral arguments on these cases, right? The attorneys have to go in front of the judge. And in the oral argument in the Second Circuit, one of the justices asked the attorney for the FCC, if we had a show that we were putting before you and it was to advise on breast cancer awareness, would that pass scrutiny or not? And the attorney's answer was, it probably would. And the court, in their written decision, said, probably is not a good enough standard for the First Amendment, and it's certainly not a good enough standard when there's millions of dollars at stake here for these businesses. They can't guess whether these things are acceptable, because when people have to guess and there's a vague standard, you're going to go a mile away from that, right? You're going to knee-jerk reaction. If you're the producer, you're going to go and say, we have to go vanilla, easy, we can't even come close to that boundary. And you might then forego very valuable content for your listeners in an effort to make sure you don't run afoul of that standard, because you don't know what the standard is.
Once upon a time, I heard this thing called local standards, that what might be considered indecent in Birmingham, Alabama, might not be considered indecent in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
That also probably creates a tough situation as well, because a lot of these complaints about indecent material are generated at the local level. If I'm watching TV in Little Rock, Arkansas, or I'm watching TV in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I levy a complaint, that complaint is generated locally, and that probably creates a lot of ambiguity.
Yeah, and the technical phrase is contemporary community standards, which is just what you said, but it's their buzzwords for that same concept. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, you're a 50,000-watt station. You broadcast all over the upper Midwest. Is it the standard in Winona? Is it the standard in downtown Minneapolis, up in, Brainerd? What standard is it that you're applying to? It makes it very difficult. The key for any test under when you're doing a constitutional analysis is it can't be arbitrary like that. You can't have to guess. There should be some certainty, and so you know what the rules are. And so for that basis alone, the FCC didn't say that the courts didn't say that the FCC couldn't craft rules. They just said the ones you crafted are flat wrong. And they went on to cite a number of instances where now broadcasters are actually saying, I may not go live with my 10 p.m. newscast anymore because I can't risk the violations that could occur if I'm doing a live interview with a sports figure. They're excited, and they happen to say, whoa, great, we won this blank game. You know, that's not going to work because the station would be fined significantly for that violation. So the court is very concerned that the industry is going to avoid good quality content for fear that they're going to get hit.
All right, so the current case is Fox versus the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
The old case, the Carlin case, the Pacifica case, was one that you said earlier created some standard, that there was a relative quiet in the industry, that for a number of years people understood where the boundary was, we're not going to go over that line, and then that boundary started to get pushed. And now we land with Fox versus the FCC. Is it your thought that we'll get more uncertainty depending on how this case goes? Will we be in an era of we're still not sure what we can and can't do?
Well,
or is that going to be the case no matter what now?
Well, what will happen is, from a procedural posture standpoint, the Second Circuit ruled on this with three judges. Now, the FCC has appealed and wants to have the entire Second Circuit hear it. That will happen. In all likelihood, it'll be upheld. Then it'll go to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court doesn't draft rules. They just tell you whether the rules that you drafted are acceptable or unacceptable under the FCC, but they'll give guidance then. But, I mean, just like any court doesn't draft a contract, they tell you whether it's enforceable or not. So in this case, what we expect is it'll go to the Supreme Court. In all likelihood, I think the Second Circuit decision is very well reasoned and very well thought through. I think it's going to be hard-pressed to be overturned. So my guess is the FCC is going to be charged with having to redo their rules, which the bottom line impact for folks in your chair is you're going to have several more years of uncertainty because this is all going to be tied up in the courts. And then once you get a decision, the FCC is going to have to come out and redraft rules, and inevitably somebody will challenge them, right? Somebody, whether it's the family council that doesn't think it's protecting minors enough or the industry that doesn't think it's clear enough what the rules should be.
And on the flip side of all of this, there are industry challenges. So let's talk about television specifically. From a creative standpoint, you have broadcast. The four big networks, Fox, CBS, NBC, ABC, are all putting out content in primetime television. But they're competing with all these cable networks that aren't under the scrutiny of the FCC that have more creative license. Let's face the facts. The ratings bear it out. That television programs like The Sopranos, a lot of bad language, a lot of violence, a lot of other scenes that would certainly not be appropriate for broadcast. It was a big hit on cable once upon a time. There's all those programs out there right now, and I would assume there's a tug of war right now even in the industry. Hey, we need a little bit more freedom on broadcast if we're going to be able to compete with the other programming on cable.
Absolutely, and, you know, this kind of goes hand in hand with cable over the top. You know, you see networks like CBS and others taking their content and putting it on the web. Well, what if we say you can have this show, you know, two men and a, what is it, two and a half men?
Two and a half men. Right. Big hit on CBS.
Huge hit. So we say two and a half men can show on the broadcast with this kind of content, but we're going to put it out on the web with an unedited content.
Bonus material.
And then we'll sell it there for a different price. You know, that actually could change the game in terms of how people view the TV, and then it could also circumvent what the FCC's regulatory authority is.
Wow. Great, great topic. Once again, indecency in the media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? We have more with Brian Grogan coming up in a moment here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know? In 1982, Moss and Barnett attorney Michael Flanagan, representing the Minnesota State Bar Association, played a key role in securing legislative approval for the proposed constitutional amendment, establishing the Minnesota Court of Appeals.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
The news you depend on from the WCCO news team is available right now at WCCORadio.com.
It is 10 minutes now before 1 o'clock, final segment, Indecency in the Media. When is it acceptable to regulate free speech? Brian Grogan is joining us. Brian, great program today, a fascinating topic, and we've talked about a lot of examples about indecent material, defining that over the years. Things are changing. There's a case in the works right now, Fox versus the FCC, and the rules will probably change again, and I think this is one of those things that will go on for a long, long time. Give us some examples of stuff that didn't air because it may have crossed that line.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see what the reaction to these new rules are. You know, these are all examples that came out in the briefs that were presented to the Second Circuit. There was a local station in Vermont, we're talking about a broadcast station now, that refused to air a political debate because one of the local politicians had actually used an expletive in previous debates. And we've got a little bit of the, you know, color of personality going on in our own local elections here at various levels. So does that mean that a broadcaster would say, I may not actually cover live a Woman of Leagues voter, you know, debate format? There are exceptions under the FCC rules for news and debate format, but you know, I think, again, there's vagueness in the rules, so we're not sure if that would be subject to a fine. There was another one where we had another PBS, I believe it was a PBS documentary. This one, I think we could all question why we shouldn't be able to see it. It was a 9/11 documentary about firefighters. And there was actual live footage of the firefighters on 9/11 in the World Trade Centers. And as you can imagine, there might be some colorful language that goes along with the effort to save people. You're in an emergency trauma situation. In order to really bring that story to the viewer, you have to show it in an unedited version. But stations refuse to carry it because it would violate the FCC's indecency rules.
Because of the dollars involved. The dollars are just... Not that anyone want to risk a fine or a complaint, but the dollars involved are still extraordinarily high, even for big companies.
That's true. But if we think of that significant moment in our world's history, in our nation's history, shouldn't we all be able to see a documentary? Or should we have to, you know, I mean, I look at it and say, does that mean then that that gets carried on cable, where unless I can afford the, you know, $80 or $100 a month cable bill, I'm not going to be able to see that? Personally, it seems to me part of the idea of having public broadcast waves, especially for a PBS station, is so everybody gets to see a good quality show like that. That's where these rules, the court really was touched by some of these submissions saying this is not good to squelch content in this manner.
And, Brian, it's fair to point out that there is a provision for material like this, but it would be much later at night in what's considered a safe harbor, and that includes radio and television.
Right, and that kind of stems from that Pacifica case that we talked about from the Carlin Seven Dirty Words. There the court said that, you know, if our theory is to to actually protect minors. Minors aren't likely to be awake after 10 o'clock at night and 4 or 5 a.m., right? Although in my house, it never seems to work quite that way. I'm the one asleep at 9 at night.
Yeah.
But at any rate, that's when your content can actually ratchet up a notch. You know, Steve, another really interesting one was a Phoenix TV station that at least submitted to the FCC, that they had refused to carry Pat Tillman's memorial service. You remember Pat Tillman,
the football player killed in service.
Star. Yep, went to Afghanistan to serve the country right after 9/11. He was killed in service, and there was some dispute about exactly how that occurred, how he died in service, I think, and the family was upset about that. Well, the station didn't want to risk having words thrown out at that memorial service, so you know, he was a big name in Phoenix, and they refused to carry that in a live version. They carried an edited version of it. Again, that just didn't seem to make sense to the FCC, especially with the modern technology we have today.
Well, it is a big topic, and I'm sure you'll continue to watch Fox versus the FCC and as it makes its way toward the Supreme Court. But this will be ongoing, that's for sure, Brian. Indecency in the media, when is it acceptable to regulate free speech? Great program, Brian. Enjoy your day.
Thanks. You too, Steve.
Once again, Brian Grogan joining us here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And we should remind you, coming up in October, with all the football conflicts, we're going to be bringing you Moss and Barnett's Minnesota Law Sunday edition. Sunday is between 1 and 2 o'clock. We'll be telling you more about that once again with some football game conflicts here in October. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, will come your way on Sundays between 1 and 2 o'clock right here on News Radio 830 WCCO.